The other piece of the puzzle here is the accountability piece. In school, when we think about accountability, yes, you're thinking about yourself failing, maybe getting kicked out of school, which is also very bad. But when we're talking about the workplace, there seems to be more real-world consequences in terms of if you don't do something, if you don't complete a task on time, you have the risk of being fired.
You're listening to the Public Health Insight Podcast, your go-to space for all things public health and global health, from the Sustainable Development Goals to the social determinants of health, as well as interesting dialogues about the diverse career opportunities that exist in these fields. Remember to subscribe to the podcast and leave us a rating on Apple Podcasts and Spotify so other people like you can benefit from our content.
Before we move on, it is important to note that the views expressed in this podcast are our own and do not necessarily represent any of the agencies or organizations we work for or are affiliated with.
Hi everyone, my name is Gordon, your host for this episode, and I'm joined by LaShawn Benedict. And in this episode, we'll be discussing how to transition from a student to a professional. What's in store for this episode, LaShawn?
Well, we're going to talk about a bunch of things. We're going to talk about how we're going to prepare for that transition, how you can develop professional skills, how you navigate the workplace, work-life balance, and the impact on your personal life when you get into the workforce. And then we'll talk a little bit about how you can thrive in your career.
That's some fun stuff. And this is an important discussion, especially for people who are currently students, because the preparation for work life, the preparation for your professional life begins when you are currently a student. So there's no better time to start thinking about these things than now, because that will set you up for success when you do ultimately enter the workforce.
Yeah, and like, think about it. What is the reason that you're in school for? Well, you want to probably get a job, right?
Well, some people, I know some people who are professional students, so that this might not be for them, those folks that want to be in school forever.
Well,
you know?
Interesting.
Yeah, okay. Wonder who that is, right?
Okay.
Yeah, all jokes aside, the goal is to build your knowledge base for a particular domain in terms of professional life and to get the skills to succeed in whatever that field is. So part of the preparation, in addition to excelling in your academic endeavors, is to also be prepared to excel in the professional space, because the skills are not necessarily the same thing that you would need. So we're going to be talking about that and a lot more. Firstly, we'll talk about preparing for the transition itself. Preparing for the transition as a student, what does that look like, LaShawn?
The transition is different for a lot of people, but I would say a lot of people, by the end of their schooling, as they transition into the workforce, they're shook.
And they're shook.
There's a lot of reasons why, right? And when we're talking about preparation, we want to think about what is the workforce? What are some of the things you can expect in the workforce? For me personally, when I'm approaching a situation I don't know too much about, I ask a lot of questions. What kind of job is available in the industry that you're in? What is required of that job? What kind of people are you going to meet in that area? What will you do in the day-to-day? What kind of skills are necessary? So those are things that I would think about. And one of the biggest things that I often hear when I talk to students is this idea of a mindset. So thinking about school, acing exams versus your actual professional performance. What does that look like, Gordon?
That's a fantastic point, because you even see this reflected a lot in something like a resume. And I understand that when you're a student, a lot of your experience comes from what you have in the classroom, the different assignments you're involved with, the marks that you got in certain courses. But in the professional space, framing in that way might not be productive, and you also have to change your mindset as well. So the skills that you needed to get a 99% on that exam are not the same skills that you need to do well on a project at work. Mm-hmm. So start to shifting that mindset to what allowed you to be a successful student was your ability to link different concepts together and perform well on exams, to what would make you a successful professional in the workplace, and starting to explore that a little bit further. And that's not necessarily related to academic performance. So decoupling those two things is a great start.
Yeah. One of the things that I always think about is, sure, when you're in school, your end goal is pretty much to do well on that exam so you could pass that course. But what skills can we take away from that and transfer into the professional space?
Yeah, there's looking at the interpersonal skills, for example. So if you did a lot of group work and you led the resolution of a lot of different conflicts, as I imagine from 4+ years of group work in school, those are some of the skills that you should be more mindful of and reflect on. So did you realize that you had gaps in those areas? Did you handle those situations very well? Did you handle them poorly? And that's something to be mindful of. And that's definitely something you can bring to your professional life as well. The academic performance piece, if you did well in school, you got a lot of marks, that shows that you have the ability to understand concepts. So don't throw that away. I know we're talking about shifting the mindset, but that's something that's useful. But then because a lot of what you did in school is the understanding piece, and you maybe haven't had the chance to apply in a public health setting or a healthcare setting or a health related setting, is focusing on maybe if you had a co-op or an internship and how you were able to utilize those skills and that knowledge. And that's what you'd be able to transfer to a real world job.
So I'm just thinking back when I was still in undergrad, I wasn't really thinking about all these things. I wasn't really thinking about establishing realistic expectations of the workplace. Mm-hmm. Why do you think that's important? Give me some examples of what that actually looks like. Sean, will I not be able to play games after school?
Maybe less games. As you progress towards becoming a professional, maybe even starting a family, yes, you'll have less time. But it's not all doom and gloom. In terms of establishing realistic expectations, there are a few things to consider. So, first of all, LaShawn mentioned mapping out what you want to do with your life post-education. Within that spectrum, there has to be an understanding of what you're going to be doing for work. The only way to find this out is to have conversations with people. There's a lot of people, and I know we're talking about public health, a lot of people that, oh, I want to do computer science. I want to do AI. I want to do business. Have you spoken to someone in this line of work?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know the availability of jobs in this line of work? Do you know what to expect as a starting salary in that particular line of work? And I think that's where a lot of the dissatisfaction and misalignment comes from when people make that transition from student to professional, where they're ill-equipped based on their current knowledge base about what the realistic expectations are to properly make that transition. So that's one specific example I'd give.
And the other one I would probably give is, you mentioned talking to people at these different organizations, but also remember, and a lot of people do this already, there is a lot of time available during your studying, after you study, to have maybe a part-time job, volunteer experience, that you can go firsthand and explore these organizations. Think about, you know, how these organizations are structured, where you see yourself in these organizations. What are your roles when you're doing these practicum experiences, these internship experiences? How does that look in the grand scheme of things? Do you see yourself in those situations?
And that's a perfect segue, LaShawn, to the second area that we wanted to focus on, and that's developing professional skills. So through those academic experiences, LaShawn, through the internships and through the part-time jobs that one might take on to prepare themselves post-education, What are some of those skills that people should focus on developing that would help them excel in a professional environment?
I would personally argue and say that, yes, things you learn in school are important. The concepts you learn are very important. But at the end of the day, I think a majority of things, like content-wise, you can learn on the job. What you necessarily can't learn right away are those interpersonal skills that Gordon and I always harp on. Communication, teamwork, leadership. All those different things are going to be so important in the workforce. You are paid, for the most part, when you get a job, at least, to fulfill your role. And what does that look like? To do certain things at your job, you're going to have to work with people. You're going to have to report to specific people. What if you don't get along with those people? What if they don't like you? How are you going to react? Are you just going to say, in the next group project, I'm not going to work with Josh or Sally again? Well, no, you're kind of stuck with them for the most part. So how are you going to react in those situations? And that's where the interpersonal skills come in.
Fantastic example, LaShawn. And this is where professional skills start to delineate themselves from academic skills. So in your undergraduate education or your first level of education post high school, you are learning about the skills of analysis, comprehending difficult concepts, and those types of things. And that absolutely will be helpful for the workplace, and that's why we do it. But there's things outside of that that will determine whether you're successful at work or not. Communication. Do you communicate regularly to your reporting manager and to your colleagues about what about the work that you're doing? Do you communicate clearly? Is your email easily understood? Are your conversations and meetings and your updates and meetings easily understood? Are you presenting them in a way that people can understand? If your work also involves communication to outside of your organization to the general public, for example, do you need to work on your communication skills of how you take complex information and communicating them for a lay audience? This is essentially very crucial to public health practice from a knowledge translation perspective. And then we like to say as well, LaShawn, that pretty much every work environment and every public health setting involves leading a project. Mm-hmm. How are your project management skills? So your boss comes to you and says, I need this done in 2 months. Do you have the foundational skills to be able to unpack that request and create a project and build a project that will be successful and that meets your stakeholder expectations? That's not how things are presented to you in school typically. And that's where the shift in mindset also has to come as well.
Yeah, that accountability piece. And you mentioned project management. Related to that, the time management skills. Usually in school, you have a specific deadline to have this assignment done by. In the workplace, you're not necessarily given a deadline all the time. So how are you going to manage your time to make sure you get what you need and you're able to provide that information with your team, with the people you're reporting to? They expect you to be the expert and for you, in some cases, to establish reasonable timelines to get things done by. So are you able to do that?
Mm-hmm. And that's a great example because in addition to planning a project, there are tasks with very short turnaround time. So your boss might call you and say, hey, I need this in 2 hours. In school,
your professor's not going to say, hey.
Right.
Assignment.
And even if they do.
New assignment, class, surprise.
Right. Even if
it's
they
stuck
do,
to the syllabus.
Class will come together and say, hey, that's unfair. We need more time. That's not how it works in the workplace. Your manager, your director says they need something by the end of the day. You have to figure it out. So you have to work on those specific skills, understanding the work environment and how it's different from school. In the work environment, you're solving actual real-life problems that don't conform to a syllabus structure and the deadlines around the curriculum, and that's something that you have to come to grips to. And that leads us into the next thing, the third thing, navigating the workspace. What are some of those typical challenges, LaShawn, that someone might face when they're going from a student to a professional work environment?
I would say the number one thing I hear from students from different regions across the world is structure.
Structure.
As a student, as we've been alluding to, a lot of what you're doing is structured. You have a class from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. You have another class from 11 to 12. You have a break. You know what kind of assignments you're going to be working on because of the syllabus. The syllabus tells you everything and holds a professor accountable as to what to expect in the course. When you're working in the workplace, there can be structure. However, they exist in a dynamic environment with a bunch of different challenges. They're being reactive to policies that are happening at the government level. They're reacting to industry trends that are happening in real time. They're reacting to what are the organization's mandates, visions, and mission. They're reacting to changes in organizational structure, changes in management. All of those different things come together and affect what you may or may not be doing on a given day. So it has this more dynamic piece to it.
And because it has a dynamic piece to it, that ties back to what we've been saying all along, is it requires an additional toolkit of skill sets. So embedded within that is relationship building. In school, it's nice to have friends and you can kind of hang out, and they don't necessarily influence your academic performance. In the workplace, it absolutely does. So it's in your interest to develop those skills that you need to build relationships with coworkers, supervisors, managers, so that you can ascertain from them, especially the managers and supervisors, what their expectations are of you. In school, you have expectations of yourself to get a certain mark in each class. And in the workplace, what you expect from yourself might not necessarily be what your manager expects from you. So that dialogue is important to find out what types of performance that your manager is looking for. And then you look for ways to meet those expectations. That's what you'll be measured as. Your success will be measured from that perspective.
Yeah, thanks for that. And I think the other piece of the puzzle here is the accountability piece. In school, when we think about accountability, yes, you're thinking about yourself failing, maybe getting kicked out of school, which is also very bad. But when we're talking about the workplace, there seems to be more real-world consequences in terms of if you don't do something, if you don't complete a task on time, you have the risk of being fired. And what does that actually mean? Well, it means you won't get paid. And what does that actually mean? You won't be able to provide for whatever your given situation is, for rent, for food, for transportation, for leisure. In school, if you fail an assignment, that's fine. And I'm saying as well, like, you can fail at the in the workplace. But I'm saying there are consequences of not being there.
Right. In addition to that, too, LaShawn, there's professional consequences as well. So if it's an improper code of conduct or consistently underperforming and you're looking for another job, then that impacts your ability to get a reference from that particular organization. So that's another real-world consequence of not meeting the expectations, and hence the importance of finding out what those expectations are. The next thing as well is, with this transition from student to professional comes a change or a shift of the work-life balance, and in particular, how your personal life might be impacted by a professional work environment compared to what it would have been when you were a student. What do people struggle with the most with this particular area, LaShawn?
Work-life balance. Huh, that's a big one. Okay, so it's important to make sure you understand this work-life balance because, again, in school, we're used to having dedicated classes and you usually schedule your time throughout the day in between classes to do what you need to do. Typically in the workplace, you're defined to this professional working period of time from 9 to 5. Of course, there's flexibility in many cases, but in general, from 9 to 5, you're kind of going to be limited with the types of things you can be doing.
Some people might argue and say they enjoy their work-life balance better as a working professional than they did as a student. And some people might actually argue the exact opposite and say work-life balance as a professional, they find it more difficult than when they were a student. So both things can be true at the same time for different people. The key thing to recognize here is that it will be different. There'll be a different impact on your personal life. And this can manifest in a few different ways. In school, you had a class, you had your schedule, you had your exam schedule, you had your assignments, and you knew that if I could just overcome and complete my last exam and go into my summer break, I'm good summer to do break. Whatever I want to do. Yeah. Whereas you're a working professional, it's more consistent throughout the whole year, and it requires a different type of endurance to make it throughout the whole year. So that's one thing. The second thing of that is, and this goes back to what we were talking about in the beginning about setting or defining realistic expectations, is what do you want to get out of your job from a work-life balance perspective? So there might be some jobs that you go for after your education that says requires evenings and weekends. And if that's something that you're not fond of, those are some of the things that you should look to avoid. And why does this even matter? Some of those careers or jobs that you pointed out that you were interested in might have these requirements that you're unaware of. And then you go and then, I want to be an epidemiologist, not realizing that you have to work on weekends and evenings sometimes. And then that kind of taints the whole experience for you. So connecting this back to setting realistic expectations in the beginning, make sure at least in the very beginning that what you expect to get out of your job and your desire for a certain level of work-life balance matches what you're actually trying to go out to pursue. So that's a lot of times where people fall down. Like, consulting is a big one, LaShawn. People have this thing in their head that consulting is like the best thing ever, whereas consulting work requires 10, 12 hours a day consistently, especially for very big projects and very big clients. And that can lead to a high level of dissatisfaction for your work environment. So,
and a high level of uncertainty in many cases.
And a high level of uncertainty. So recognizing that up front and making sure there's alignment with what your expectations are and what you're actually going out there and trying to pursue.
And I think a important point about this as well is when you're in the workforce, you are, again, limited to your job description and the roles and responsibilities there. And sometimes it could limit the amount of learnings you're going to do outside that realm. And to many people, that might be frustrating because you're going to be doing the same types of tasks, maybe in different situations. Whereas in school, you're going to be learning about different topics, different courses, doing different things. You might not get that variety in terms of things you're doing every day. It could lead to a lot of burnout because let's be real here. Like, you might get bored of doing the same thing over and over again, collecting a paycheck, rinse and repeat.
Depending on your work schedule or uncertainties around your work schedule, that might prevent you from engaging in certain hobbies that you liked before while you were a student. So, for example, if you like to go to the gym during a certain time or participate in certain types of tournaments, but your work schedule doesn't allow for that, that's a significant change that might affect your mental health as well. So being mindful of how those things can change before you jump into that space will help you to better prepare your mindset to handle those situations.
And I want to say one more thing, because I think it's important and very relatable to a lot of people, is after a long 9-to-5 day, you're tired. You might not want to do anything else and just sleep, you know? Yeah. So how are you supposed to manage your other priorities in life, be able to pursue your other interests and hobbies outside of work? In many realities, you might be drained. What do you do?
Yeah. And a lot of people too, LaShawn, are working and then decide to go back to school, and then they're still working. So if you superimpose pursuing education on top of working, and then that doesn't allow much space to pursue anything else. So thinking about that as well.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And that goes on to talk about, okay, we have this work-life balance. You're in your career. How are we able to thrive in that career? How are you able to make sure you don't get bored? How do you make sure you're able to keep upskilling yourself to maybe land even better job, mm-hmm. a more leadership role in the organization? Or should you just not worry about that?
The important thing to recognize with this piece, with thriving in your career, is that your growth does not end when your school is completed.
So that's the first thing.
But I paid a lot of money. It can if you want to. It can if you want to.
I paid a lot of money to get an education. Why do I have to keep learning?
It can. It can if you want to. Some people complete their formal education. They get their job after completing, and they're completely fine with it for the rest of their life. And that's totally perfect. Fine. They will still learn in that job, right? There's new standards, new benchmarks, and new practices that come up that they have to be aware of. So it's hard to avoid learnings, and you could learn within a specific role.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't necessarily mean growth in terms of career advancement, but growth in terms of learning new skills.
Right.
For those people who are interested in growing beyond where they start after school, that is an active rather than a passive process.
What do you mean by that?
So that means that there's learning and mastering your particular job.
Mm-hmm.
Being good at the job within the constraints of the organization and department that you work in. And then there's exceeding expectations and growing beyond the scope of what the organization does. And then that sets you up to potentially look elsewhere if you're interested, or vertical growth within the organization itself, and to capitalize on those opportunities. So what does that look like? There is obviously the more traditional route is going back to school, doing an MBA, doing another master's, or doing a DRPH or a PhD. Those are the more common ways that people might think to develop their knowledge base and to grow their skills. But there's other ways that you can do so outside of the classroom, through certificates and certifications for free or at a low cost, that can supplement the skills that you already have, or to develop new ones that align maybe better with another opportunity that you would like to capitalize on.
Exactly. And there's also opportunities within your organization sometimes. Maybe it's a leadership program, a shadowing program, to be able to learn more about what's out there, and also show to the people who are supervising you that you might be interested in different positions and going to a higher leadership position. It's good to let them know some of your goals so they could help you achieve some of them and guide you toward things that will make you a better candidate.
Mm-hmm. And I know we've been talking a lot, LaShawn, about you have to prepare to transition from student to professional, and these are the 100 things that you need to think about. This is an area that you can have more patience on. Hmm. So we're not asking you to think about these things while you're in your first year of your master's program. Yeah. Or while you're in your fourth year of your undergraduate degree, this is something that once you start your first job, being aware of maybe where, how further you'd like to develop your skills or any other additional areas of interest that you'd like to explore, and then mapping out a pathway on how to get there. So you might start a job with no intentions for a formal leadership or management role, and that's totally fine. And then you do your work for a year or two. You find that, wow, I really like leading people. And a lot of my colleagues tell me I'm good at this, and my manager tells me I'm good at this. Maybe it's something I should look at. And then at that point, you could start to map out a pathway to get you from where you are to a leadership role. And that's sort of the approach to take with these things. But it's not something you need to think about just yet, but understanding that it is possible once you start to grow further than what you initially expected.
Yeah, thanks for contextualizing those timelines, because a lot of this is very overwhelming and there's a lot to consider. But, you know, it's just having those, like we said at the beginning, having those realistic expectations and just understanding what each of these steps entail, right? Again, Gordon and I are talking about this and we're reflecting on some of our experiences, but it wasn't smooth sailing for me anyways, and I'm sure Gordon as well. There are a lot of ups, there's a lot of downs, a lot of turns, a lot of twists, a lot of swerves. I initially wanted to be in biochemistry, transitioned into public health. So there's a lot of learnings, failures that are involved in the process. But this episode just serves to talk about these different areas so you have a better idea of what to expect.
Absolutely. We have a lot of resources on these topics, LaShawn, through our hundreds of episodes that we've released to date, covering professional development, building a resume, pursuing practicums, and everything in between. So I encourage those who want some more information to check out those resources. And this is a lot. This can be overwhelming. So maybe seeking out a mentor as well, who can kind of help walk you through some of these things. And it's good to think about these areas, because when you meet with a mentor, these are likely exactly what they're going to be asking you about to get you situated and to shape your expectations in that regard. So be optimistic, understanding that the world is your oyster, and understanding that you can change your mind and your mind can change you as well. Thank you for listening to the Public Health Insight Podcast, your go-to space for informative conversations, inspiring community action. If you enjoy our podcast, be sure to subscribe and leave us a rating on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. See you in the next one.